The White House's Unruly Neighborhood, Crime, Scandal, and Intrigue in the History of Lafayette Square. The chapter, The Perilous Life of America's Greatest Foreign Friend. The former President's Park is justly named for Marie-Joseph-Paul-Yves Roche-Gilbert de Montier, the Marquis de Lafayette. Without France, its critical ally, America likely would have lost its War of Independence. And Lafayette, France's most important envoy to the fledgling United States, gets a good share of credit for the win. Lafayette was only 19 years old when the Continental Congress appointed him a major general. He joined George Washington's remarkable and youthful staff. It included 19-year-old Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Hamilton. Also Hamilton's friend and fellow aide-de-camp to Washington, the 22-year-old John Loren of South Carolina. Along with his precocious nature, Lafayette was a visionary, far ahead of his time. He was in favor of democracy and democratic republics before any of any size in the U.S. and much later France had been established. He was an abolitionist, almost a century before America abolished slavery, and two generations before the British Empire did. He was a prominent advocate of the French Revolution's ban on it before Napoleon brought it back. Lafayette was ever nudging his friends among the Virginia leadership of the American Revolution, Washington, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, and others, to do more about restricting slavery. And the Marquis practiced what he preached. In 1785, he set up a spice plantation in French Guiana, which over time freed and educated over 60 enslaved workers. It was an experiment in manumission, in giving liberty to slaves. Sadly, when the French government brought back slavery after the French Revolution, Lafayette's plantation, La Belle Gabrielle, was confiscated, and its laborers were sold off. The Marquis could be a pain in the side. Along with hectoring American leaders about slavery, he goaded General Washington into letting him fight. Washington was reluctant. Lafayette might die in battle, robbing the Americans of their liaison to France. However, Washington sometimes relented. In 1777, he allowed Lafayette to fight at the Battle of Brandywine in Pennsylvania. Yet Lafayette was badly wounded there, taking a bullet in the calf. Fortunately, a young Virginia sharpshooter, James Monroe, the future president, came upon the Frenchman and tended to him until Washington's own surgeon gave the Marquis medical aid. Lafayette and Monroe became friends for life. The best of times and the worst. Lafayette's statue occupies a corner of the square, not the center of the park named for him, because the figure of Andrew Jackson preceded it there. Jackson's statue dates from 1853, a full 38 years before Lafayette's image was sculpted. Congress discussed swapping Jackson for Lafayette, but congressmen from Old Hickory's home state of Tennessee objected. The sculptors, Alexander Falguer and Antonin Mercy, put a figure of Lafayette at the top of the monument. The French admirals and counts, the Comte de D'Estaing and the Comte de Grasse, are on the east side. By the way, in the American Revolution, D'Estaing was largely a failure. Later, during the French Revolution, he made the mistake of defending Queen Marie Antoinette. Like her, D'Estaing was put to death. De Grasse was more successful. His defeat of a British fleet in the run-up to the Battle of Yorktown allowed Lafayette, Hamilton, and the rest to perform their daring do at that climactic fight of America's Revolution. According to National Park Service records on the construction of the statue, its west side is supposed to feature General Rochambeau, to the viewer's left, and General Louis Duportal, to the right. Rochambeau was the commander of the French land forces in America, and Duportal was Washington's chief of military engineers. But some wonder if they are the actual figures in the statue. Duportal rather resembles Lafayette. Rochambeau looks little like his portraits and seems a dead ringer for a founding father, who served as U.S. Minister to France at the start of the French Revolution in 1789. When Lafayette was commander of the French National Guard and a leader of the Revolution's early moderate phase. Assuming the figure to the right is Lafayette, the fellow clasping his right hand is Thomas Jefferson. This makes some sense, as at the time Jefferson, with his happy talent for composition, co-wrote, some say ghost-wrote, France's own Declaration of the Rights of Man. That is, France's own influential equivalent to the Declaration of Independence, penned by Jefferson, and of the U.S. Bill of Rights, largely put together by Jefferson's friend George Mason, and the U.S. Constitution, largely crafted by Jefferson's colleague James Madison. Did the sculptor Falguière change the original plans and pair an American with the Marquis? It seems so. In any case, when the French Revolution sank into an orgy of blood, things went badly for Lafayette. The Marquis was a moderate revolutionary. He wished to keep Louis XVI as the king, but as a constitutional monarch, with an elected parliament holding much of the power. To the regicidal radicals in power, his stance amounted to counter-revolution. Crowds even called for the blood of his wife, Marie Adrienne. When Lafayette ordered troops to fire on a mob wanting to oust the king, his status became untenable. In summer 1792, General Lafayette was leading a French army near the Netherlands against Austrian and Prussian forces seeking to crush the French Revolution. But in Paris, the Ministry of Justice put out a warrant for his arrest. This would have meant imprisonment and death by the guillotine, that novel humane means of execution. Lafayette crossed the border into Holland, then an Austrian province, to escape arrest. Minister to France Jefferson, meantime, had returned to the U.S. to serve as Secretary of State in President Washington's new federal government. He was succeeded as ambassador by Governor Morris of New York, the author of the Constitution's We the People preamble. Morris was in turn succeeded by Jefferson's protege, James Monroe, the very man who had saved Lafayette's life at the Battle of Brandywine. Monroe proceeded to save the life of Lafayette's wife, Adrienne. In fall 1792, the French radicals, after failing to arrest Lafayette, imprisoned Adrienne and much of her family in Paris. They guillotined her mother, and her grandmother, and her aunt. Adrienne herself was slated for execution via the blade. Minister Monroe and his valiant wife, Elizabeth Courthright Monroe, schemed to save Adrienne. James Monroe was in a delicate position, as President Washington and his envoys were trying to remain above the fray of France's increasingly wild revolution. So Monroe's spouse, Elizabeth, acted as a kind of stand-in for her husband. She made a big show of visiting Adrienne during her detention at La Fore prison. Mrs. Monroe journeyed there past the baying mobs of Paris in a regal diplomatic carriage, complete with coachmen. She met Adrienne, greeted her warmly, and on leaving announced she'd soon visit Adrienne again. The message was clear. The United States would look unkindly on the execution of the wife of a hero of America's own revolution. The prison authorities backed down and released Adrienne. Her own life spared, Adrienne's concern became her son, the 13-year-old George Washington Lafayette, the godson of the U.S. president. His life was in peril so long as he remained in France during its reign of terror. The Monroes came to the rescue again. They regularly hosted dinners at their Paris home with Adrienne and with a visiting Boston merchant, Tom Perkins. Perkins was struck by Adrienne's predicament. He noted, "She is much worn down by her misfortunes, which she says will know no end but in the grave. The poor woman." But the group hatched a plan of escape. Minister Monroe issued an American passport for the son under the name Motier, Lafayette's little-known family name. The credential ignored his aristocratic title, which might have alerted the militants. Meantime, Perkins obtained the required French travel documents and arranged for a ship. The teen slipped on board at the port of Le Havre. Several months later, George Washington Lafayette arrived safely in New England. He remained for a time in New York, in the care of Alexander Hamilton. Later, he resided with George Washington at the Presidential Mansion in Philadelphia, and later still at Mount Vernon. Yet Adrienne's life was still at risk. James Monroe got a hold of passports for her family from, of all places, the state of Connecticut. For Connecticut had granted American citizenship to the entire Lafayette family. Adrienne Lafayette was able to leave France with her daughters, Anastasie and Virginia. Monroe's securing of documents for Adrienne, her daughters, and her son seems like a scene out of the movie Casablanca, where the Humphrey Bogart character provides letters of transit to allow the Ingrid Bergman character and her paramour to escape imprisonment and death in Nazi-controlled Morocco. Imprisonment and a daring try at escape. Meanwhile, Lafayette, after crossing into the Netherlands to escape France's revolution, was arrested by the Prussians as a revolutionary. The King of Prussia clamped Lafayette in prison. 2 years later, the Marquis was transferred to a dungeon in distant Olmutz, a town of Prussian ally Austria in today's Czech Republic. His plight put President Washington in a bind. He had a fatherly affection for Lafayette, but with his new government fragile and his new nation weak, the president wanted to avoid entanglements in Europe's affairs and wars. Helping Lafayette could mean taking sides against the alliance of monarchies, including Austria, arrayed against revolutionary France. In any event, the U.S. had no diplomatic relations with Vienna. Moreover, Washington, Hamilton, and Supreme Court Chief Justice John Jay were then hammering out a U.S. policy of neutrality towards France and its chief enemy, Britain. Washington did send to Austria James Marshall, the brother of future Supreme Court Chief Justice John Marshall, for unofficial talks to try to gain Lafayette's release, but the discussions failed. Still, Washington's men helped the Lafayette family financially while the Marquis languished in jail. Jefferson discovered an obscure legal provision which let the federal government pay Lafayette with interest for his half-dozen years of U.S. military service. Washington and Hamilton contributed money of their own, and Governor Morris advanced a hefty sum to Adrienne. While the U.S. government could do little, friends of Lafayette, including close acquaintances of Hamilton and Jefferson, hatched an astonishing plot in 1794 to rescue the Marquis from prison. The conspirators were Angelica Schuyler Church and her husband, John Barker Church. Angelica was the sister of Hamilton's wife, Elizabeth, and a friend of Jefferson's. John Church was a pro-French member of the British Parliament. While residing in the U.S. during its revolution, he'd supplied arms to American and French soldiers. The churches decided Lafayette must be freed. According to documents at Cornell University, the couple hired as their secret agent an Anglo-German physician, Justice Bowman. Dr. Bowman in turn recruited Francis Huger, a South Carolinian attending medical school in Austria. Back in 1777, Huger's family had hosted Lafayette after his arrival in America, befriending him. On the continent, Dr. Bowman learned of tight security at the Olmutz prison, an indication that a VIP was detained there. He lodged at a tavern nearby and confirmed Lafayette's whereabouts. Next, he befriended the head of the prison's hospital. He persuaded the man to smuggle into Lafayette's hands documents supposedly from the Marquis's relatives. But scrawled on the papers was invisible ink which, when heated, revealed plans for a daring escape. Near the prison, Lafayette was permitted to take occasional carriage rides under military guard. One afternoon, he and his conveyance, guarded only by a corporal, were rolling along the countryside. Suddenly, Bowman and his friend Agent Huger charged up on their horses. In a wild fracas, they detained the soldier, but not before he nearly bit through Lafayette's hand. The two rescuers hoisted the bleeding Marquis up on a horse. Bowman and Huger yelled at Lafayette in English to head to the nearby town of Hof. There, another horse-drawn carriage with a hidden compartment would whisk him out of Austrian territory and to freedom. However, Lafayette misheard the command, "Go to Hof," to mean "get off," meaning simply "get away from here." He sprinted ahead on his mount, took a wrong turn, and got lost in the surrounding hills. Betrayed by a workman, he was ambushed by an armed posse of a royal magistrate. The authorities threw him back into the prison and placed him in solitary confinement. The great escape attempt had failed. Lafayette's woeful situation was alleviated the following year, however, by his courageous wife Adrienne. After fleeing France, she wangled an interview with the Austrian emperor by pretending to be someone other than the spouse of a notorious revolutionary. After speaking with Adrienne, the emperor agreed to allow her and her daughters to join the Marquis in prison. Lafayette's spirits soared with the family reunion. However, Adrienne took sick from the jail's dank conditions and suffered for years from welts and sores. Never fully recovering, she would die in 1807 at age 48. In 1797, after 5 years of confinement for Lafayette, General Napoleon Bonaparte arranged for his release. But for the rest of a long life, Lafayette was a pariah in his own home country. Due to his calls for democracy, Napoleon shunned him. So did Louis XVIII, Louis XVI's grandson, who regained power when Napoleon met his Waterloo in 1815. Until his death in 1834, Lafayette was largely barred from politics. A grand reunion. Yet one nation put out a welcome mat. In 1824, the Marquis, at age 66, made a 16-month tour of the United States. By then, an established and rapidly growing Democratic Republic. With his son, George Washington Lafayette, he traveled by horse and steamship through all 24 of the U.S. states. Throughout his journey, wild crowds greeted him, feted him, named streets and theaters for him. Elderly veterans of the Revolutionary War met him with tearful shouts of Yorktown, Monmouth, Brandywine, and other battles. In Tennessee, his steamboat sunk, but his son saved him. He met and was charmed by Andrew Jackson there. In Virginia, he journeyed to Mount Vernon and wept at Washington's grave. At Monticello, he reconnected with the 81-year-old Jefferson and remained 13 days, his longest stay on the trip, conversing in French and drinking much French wine. He was joined there by another ex-president, 73-year-old James Madison. In Massachusetts, he supped with another former chief executive, John Adams, then 89 years old. Adams' son John Quincy Adams would be elected president that year over Jackson. While he was in the Boston area, its roads packed with 200,000 spectators, Lafayette laid the cornerstone to the Bunker Hill Monument, a memorial obelisk to the Revolutionary War battle there. The ceremony's keynote speaker, Senator Daniel Webster, said of Lafayette, "Heaven saw fit to ordain that the electric spark of liberty should be conducted through you from the New World to the Old." To the puzzlement of some, Lafayette, after the ceremonies, took out a shovel and filled canvas bags with soil. He placed the sacks in his carriage and took them back with him to France. While in Washington City, Lafayette was the White House guest of honor of the incumbent president, the friend who had saved his life in battle, James Monroe. The Marquis's aide, Auguste Lavoisier, was astonished at the simple attire of the president of a republic. He noted the cabinet room's absence of pomp. Instead of those puerile ornaments which so many ninnies wear in the antechambers of the palaces of Europe. At this time, Monroe renamed President's Park Lafayette Square. On Capitol Hill, the Marquis was the first foreigner to address a joint session of Congress. At a dinner, he seemed to predict the two world wars and America's salvation of France and other nations during them. He toasted to the perpetual union of the United States. It has always saved us in times of storm. One day it will save the world. Congress awarded him with a fortune of $20,000 and over 20,000 acres of Florida land. Lafayette was whisked back to Europe aboard the warship USS Brandywine, named for the battle where he fell wounded. Lafayette saved the best for the last. When he died in 1834, his family buried him at Picpus Cemetery in Paris. There, attendees performed a highly unusual ceremony. They lowered his coffin into a grave. Then from his carriage, they brought out canvas bags of soil. Then Lafayette's son, George Washington Lafayette, poured the earth onto the casket. The soil was from Bunker Hill, collected during the Marquis's visit there a decade before. Thus Lafayette, stymied throughout his long life from bringing freedom to his own nation, rests for all eternity under the soil of a free people, a people he himself had helped liberate. From the book, The White House's Unruly Neighborhood, Crime, Scandal, and Intrigue in the History of Lafayette Square. Copyright 2019 by Edward P. Moser, McFarland and Company.